Hello and welcome to Real Crime Profile. This is Jim Clementi, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor and writer, producer on CBS's Criminal Minds. And with me today is...
Laura Richards, founder and director of Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service, author of the book Policing Domestic Violence and of the DASH Risk Assessment Model.
And I'm Lisa Zambetti. I am the casting director for Criminal Minds and Criminal Minds Beyond Borders, where Jim Clementi and Tim Clementi are my colleagues.
That's great. Well... here we are for a little mini pod because we have all been extremely busy, overwhelmed actually, and we wanted to let you know, just touch base and let you know that we're still here and we're still going strong and we have a lot of great podcasts coming.
Yeah.
So I just want to explain that I actually turned in my script on Criminal Minds
this
past week and Lisa got it. You got to read it. I hope you liked
did,
it.
I did. It is. Oh, my gosh. We actually, in my office, we read them out loud.
Really?
Yeah. So me and my associate and assistant, Stephanie and Greg, we sit around and we all like cast each other in the different roles. Like I'm usually Penelope. And then we all read it out loud so we can really hear it and visualize it. And we were both just, we were all just stunned at how, what a brave script this one is. It's very different. It's not like any other script that I've read on the show before. So I'm really excited to cast the hell out of this one. Yeah.
I do try to push the envelope a little bit because I actually did this behavioral analysis work, criminal behavioral analysis for a living. And so I like to actually get a little deeper into the good guys and the bad guys, and focus on what kind of people we're really dealing with. And I tried to do that with my script. Hopefully you like it, and hopefully the public will like it as well. It's pushing some boundaries, though.
It is.
Can you say anything about it, Jim? I mean, I've read it, too. I haven't read the latest version, but it's a subject that's very close to my heart as well. But
yeah, so I have not, I cannot do any spoilers on it. That's all
spoiler
up to CBS.
Alert. Okay, that's a shame.
Unfortunately. But I do really, you know, I can't wait to cast it because I think that'll be great. And I can't wait to actually see it come to life.
Yeah.
It's really an amazing thing. And I understand my brother just...
Yes. So this week is Jim's script. But actually last week on Beyond Borders, we were casting Tim Clementi's script, which, wow, that one was really different.
Really?
I can say it takes place in Taiwan. But wow, he went there, man.
Really?
He really went there. Yeah.
Well, what are the chances of that? That we're both writing scripts like back to back like this, and I know he's shooting his this coming week, and then I'm shooting like in a week and a half, and so it'll be crazy.
Yeah.
It's by the way, when we shoot scripts, it's pretty grueling, and to know how demanding it is just for the writer to be there and to be on and to be cognizant of everything that's going on and then think about the director and then all the crew that do this week in, week out. They don't get a break.
No.
You know, they have to do it every single day, every single week. And they're very early mornings and very late nights.
That's right.
And a lot of stress when you're shooting.
But you know what's coming up, Jim, that everybody on Criminal Minds is so excited for?
Yeah.
Halloween.
We have a very special Criminal Minds episode on Halloween that Matthew Gubler directed.
But not only that, on the set on Halloween, everybody dresses up and we have a huge contest, a Halloween costume contest, and they're so creative. You know, these people, you know, dress sets and dress people for a living, and the costumes, I mean, aren't you always amazed at the kind of costumes people come up with?
Yeah. It's really
cool.
Amazing.
Really cool.
It really is.
I mean, in the UK, you know, not to poo-poo Halloween, because I know it's a really big deal here, but, you know, Halloween's really more for children, and the children go out trick-or-treating with their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there are some parties, but I'm led to believe this would be my first Halloween here, that it really is a big deal. So I'm kind of bracing myself.
You need to go to West Hollywood then on Halloween, because there will be roughly 1 million people in the streets. They literally close the street for a couple of miles and it will be packed human to human. The entire couple of miles will be filled with people.
With everyone dressed up, right?
Oh, most people are dressed up. But it's kind of disorganized in that it's not exactly like a parade like they have in New York City. And let me tell you, New York City on Halloween is amazing.
It's amazing.
And they used to actually start the parade at 34th Street and then head down
to the village. Yeah.
They ended up turning it around because the village is kind of, it's at the end of Manhattan. It's kind of in a small streets. They're mm-hmm. kind of not very well organized. They're all haphazard. And it's very difficult for people to get out of that area, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
So they turned it around, and now it starts in the village and ends on 34th Street, which is a much broader street,
right.
broader avenue, much more, easy to access and to disperse the crowds afterwards. But what's amazing about the New York City Parade is that it's not just people in costumes. It's small plays that go on.
Oh, yeah.
Little vignettes.
I've done that. Yes.
Yeah.
It's so much fun.
Everything from, I remember when George Bush Sr. announced that he didn't like broccoli, there was one where there was a limo. There were six guys dressed as Secret Service agents walking alongside, and there was a guy dressed as Barbara Bush sticking out of the sunroof, throwing out bouquets of broccoli throughout the whole thing. She must have had 400 tons of broccoli in that thing. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
But they would each do little vignettes like that, and there was one where there was all these people, and they made a subway car, and there was one guy dressed as a woman with a handbag, and they had guys dressed as pillars from the subway in New York, and so her handbag would get caught in the door would close, and it would start dragging her along and banging her into these pillars. I mean, it was just absurd.
Crazy.
It was insane.
Yeah.
What costume or vignette did you do?
Oh, God, who knows? Some very avant-garde theatrical thing that was based on Mother Courage. I mean, it was a whole thing. It was, like, way out there. But it is really fun, and it's nice because it's one of the last warm nights in New York before it starts getting cold. So everybody's out, and it's just a really great time. But I was in London once for one Halloween, and it was much more low-key, and they take it kind of literally. There were, like, only ghosts and witches and vampires, but there weren't people dressed like you know.
It's not a sort of a every costume goes. It's very much in theme.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I had some friends go to Universal on Friday night, and they were going to the kind of the maze and the fright night. I mean, it seemed lots of people seem to be very into it.
It's really expanded, and what you'll see if you go is that there'll be a lot of political statements. I'm sure that Trump and Hillary will be very well represented there, and to the absurd.
Yeah.
And but there'll also be any other kind of newsworthy statements or cases or events will also be depicted. People try to be very creative about, you know, there's the literal, like, where you know a guy walks around with a box of cereal with a knife through it and blood dripping out. That's a serial killer, right?
Oh my God.
That kind of stuff. But then there's really elaborate costumes where people manage to, and I did this once in New York, manage to put on a costume that makes it look like they're sort of like one person carrying another person.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of fun. But because some of these things are just like blow you away. And then you're going to see some pretty outrageous stuff in West Hollywood if you go, Laura.
Yeah. I'm not sure I'm ready for it, Jim C. This sounds, you know.
Just be ready for outrageous stuff.
Yeah.
Because there are very scantily clad people, and there are very elaborately dressed people.
So, Laura, I don't think we asked you, what have you been up to?
So, yeah, I mean, it's been really busy since I've been back. And certainly some of our listeners and those who follow us on Twitter will see that we had a campaign for the increase of sentences for stalkers debated again in the House of Commons last week. And that's for it to increase from 5 years to 10 years. And Alex Chalk, who's the MP and who's also the MP for someone called Dr. Eleanor Aston, who is an inspiration and who was stalked for 8 years, her story is really being used to highlight why it needs to change in terms of having a maximum sentence of 10 years. And it's certainly something that when we were campaigning for the stalking law, we asked, you know, and actually drafted a bill that said that the maximum sentence should be 10 years, but they actually went for a 5-year tariff. So it's being debated again under a 10-minute rule bill, which is great. And it's going to be back in Parliament on October the 28th. So that's one of our campaigns going through, as well as Dr. Ellen Astron appearing on BBC Radio 5. And that interview we've tweeted as well, where she really does clearly describe, you know, how terrifying stalking is and all the insidious behaviours. She didn't have a relationship with her stalker. He was actually a patient. She was a doctor. Mm. And that's how it all came about and, you know, escalated and was pretty terrifying. And then some of our other clients or ambassadors have also spoken out in support of it. So Shingy from the Noisettes, you know, is incredibly brave speaking to the BBC. We had it covered on BBC Inside Out. So, you know, it really has been incredibly busy. And we've also got a campaign running in Northern Ireland. So as well, along with certainly, you know, when we talk about the dash on Real Crime Profile and when people hear it or see it on Twitter, I've had numerous Skype calls with Australia who now want to implement it in various states, which I'm very excited about. And we're also running new training in March 2017 on the Dash Risk Assessment Tool. So there's been a lot of things going on in the background, as well as some really exciting meetings about stalking and an advocacy service and law change over here, which I'm not going to say too much about until it gets to a slightly more advanced stage. So, but I have everything crossed that things are moving in the right way, and raising awareness is really important to do that.
Can you just explain, because, you know, me being a lawyer and I don't know, but what is a 10-minute rule bill that you mentioned?
So yes, this is a sort of an anomaly in our constitution back in the UK. So it's basically where any subject can be introduced in the House of Commons by an MP, but under the 10-minute rule bill, which is very literal, you can only do it within 10 minutes.
Oh, and so you only have 10 minutes to actually advocate for the bill.
Correct. Oh, and, you know, it's a way new legislation can come in. You raise awareness of something. And of course, it has to have support. So it's not to say that you can just bring something in and then it happens. So the bill will be brought in on the 28th of October, where there'll be further discussions. But certainly, having listened to Alex Chalk's compelling case, and it's something that I've talked with him about, and we've produced a report, which is also the evidence base for change. He did a fantastic job that seemed to get a huge amount of support actually whilst they were debating it in the House of Commons. So now it's through to the next stage and we will see what happens. It was certainly, you remember when I went back to London in April, I actually gave a speech on this subject in particular, and Alex Chalk did too, and the Justice Minister was there. So we have discussed it before, and it has been something that, you know, like I said, a report has been produced on. But it is a way where things can be introduced in a slightly quicker way should there be a need to.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not even enough time for a TED Talk, you know, so.
Well, the TED Talks are 10 minutes, aren't they?
You just have to be very, 15,
they started at 10, you just have to be very eloquent. I mean, I get asked now, I'm doing a talk coming up and with Pepperdine University, I've been asked to deliver it in the TED Talk style of 10 minutes. And I have to say, I don't think I've done anything in 10 minutes other than having to introduce, you know, when I have given speeches in Parliament, they're very strict on your timing. So you have to speak quickly and get a lot in, and of course you have to create the case for that's overwhelming and compelling for change to happen.
Wow.
And to get the support from cross parties, which actually this particular campaign does have, much like the Parliamentary Stalking Law Reform Inquiry and our Domestic Violence Law Reform Inquiry. So it's a lot of hard work behind the scenes to get it to that stage.
Yeah.
It's so worth it, though. We should tell our listeners that up next, you know, next week, we're going to have our interview with Zoe Dronfield. And boy, her story, it makes every hour that Laura puts into advocating for victims and going in front of parliaments just worth it. When you hear her story and hear how much work still needs to be done to protect people.
Yeah. I mean, it just she blew me away. I mean, it's got so many amazingly disturbing aspects, but also a very silver lining. I mean, she is an amazing woman who turned around just, I mean, with superhuman strength, turned around from being victimized to being an advocate, and she's a real amazingly strong partner for Paladin.
She is, and you know, it shows that there really is life after abuse, and I know some people can't see that when they're in a situation. But Zoe is incredible, and you know, she has found her voice, thank goodness. And you know, we support her certainly with the campaigns we're running for the Serial Stalker Register. And you know, over the last few weeks as well, and I know, you know, you're both aware of this, but just to say to our listeners, we still get contacted by so many victims. And you know, even today I woke up early this morning and to a cry for help by someone who's in a very serious predicament. And I could see straight away just from reading the email that we needed to take action quickly rather than sit on it. So, you know, this is really a good way of raising awareness. And certainly, you know, Jim's script, the Criminal Minds script, you know, threading in some really important issues and trying to reach people in a different way is a very important part of what we're doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the reasons why I dedicated my second or third career to writing on television, because network television reaches millions of people at once. And then in the end, it reaches people all over the world. And much the same way a podcast does, but with, you know, a huge audience. And you can actually take that opportunity to educate them while they're being entertained. And there's a lot of people who just sort of poo-poo it and say it's just entertainment. But the fact is that it isn't. And yeah. And Lisa can attest, and I'm sure you can too, Laura, about the fact that when you watch these episodes, you do learn things. Yeah. And that's why I think it's so important that we bring authenticity to this and not simply just irresponsibility, because there is some of that going on.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that going on in TV.
Yeah, and sensationalizing things and being salacious, which does happen. But there's also a lot of shows now, you know, Jim... Criminal Minds is a case in point where people are being educated, and you never know when you may be a lifeline. And that's why I always say the Dash is a lifeline to so many victims of when they choose to reach out and what you do next. You know, the steps that you take, mm-hmm. the questions that you ask, you really only get the first chance to get it right, which is why we call it first time, right time. So using entertainment, even with shows that we've done in the past, there's always a very serious theme to it, which is the raising awareness and the early identification and intervention and prevention, which really does make a difference in terms of keeping people alive and changing lives. Mm-hmm. So it is about homicide prevention, but it's also about changing lives so that people can go on to live abuse-free, but also dealing with the perpetrators in a robust and rigorous way and trying to help them change their behaviour if they do have that epiphany and actually do want to change what it is that they're doing. And that can happen. It's a smaller portion of perpetrators, but it can happen. So the lifeline aspect and the victim's voice is crucial, and it's been a very busy few weeks.
And just from a casting point of view, you know, it is very important to me that I cast people who look like real people and who represent all kinds of victims and all kinds of parts of our community, including not just casting killers who look like the big scary monster, because so often, as we learn from Zoe, they don't look like the scary monster. They're the boy next door. They're the person you least expect.
Or woman
next door. Thank you. And but it is very important to me that those faces you see, you know, you see yourself in those faces on TV too. So
yeah.
Anyway. So moving on.
So what else have you been up to, Lisa?
just plugging along with your scripts. Oh, I did. I moved into a new house, which was a long time coming, and we worked very hard to make that happen, to have a forever home. And I had an open house, and Laura came, and we had a little beverage and a little this and that, and it was
fantastic.
Really fun.
Yeah.
was really fun. And my kids really love showing off their house to their friends, and it's all decorated for Halloween. So
oh, really?
That's great. We're really excited. We should talk about the episode that we're going to probably be dropping after our pod with Zoe, which is going to be concerning Meredith Kircher's murder and the Amanda Knox documentary that's on Netflix. You want to talk about that, Jim?
This has been a case, obviously, that's been in the zeitgeist for many years. I believe it's 7 or 8 years by now. 8 years, I believe, since Meredith Kircher's murder. And just like all of the other noteworthy cases that we discuss, we're going to be talking about Meredith Kircher and who she was and what happened to her, and giving her voice, and also how that voice was distorted and abused, I believe, by the system and by the media.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully we'll restore some of the order in looking at what really went on behind the scenes of that case.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, an interesting point to note that what was seen in the UK in terms of the media was very different to what you were seeing over in the US. So I think there's lots of different parts, you know, that we're going to get into, because, you know, the victim side, yes, Meredith did get forgotten in all of it. And I think also the way women are portrayed as offenders versus how men are portrayed as offenders, and how the media, you know, really do and can conjure up different images. So, you know, I'm really pleased that we're going to be covering this case, that we can give a voice to Meredith and to her family, and talk about, you know, the crime scene, the analysis. I know, Jim, you've done quite a lot of analysis in the past on the case in particular. But I think there's also an interesting narrative about the criminal justice system too, just how Italy differs to the UK and to the US. So I think there's scope. I'm sure, Lisa, you'll be very interested in the way that they put it together too, in terms of the actual documentary itself.
I was fascinated. I just watched it last night on Netflix. And, you know, regardless of the content or what side you fall on in this case, the documentary itself is just so well crafted. It is just a masterclass in how to make a documentary, from just the aesthetics of it, the music, the imagery, how they punctuate the scenes. I really enjoyed it just from that point of view. And I know we're going to get into the content in a later podcast, but I highly recommend people watching it, especially before they listen to our pod, and so you can know what we're talking about.
Yeah, what I love about today and what we used to call television is that there are now channels in which you can literally just surf documentaries on almost any topic you can think of. I mean, that was not available to us in decades past, and certainly it's a resource that people should use. And we'll talk about what does making a documentary actually mean, and what kind of responsibility do documentary makers have when they're doing that job. And I think we've talked about a couple of really important ones, for example, the Making a Murderer and also People versus O.J. Simpson. There were issues that we brought up about them and what was really going on and who got lost in that. And I think in all of them, and I think we'll talk about it as well with the Meredith Kircher murder, but in all of them, the victims seem to just disappear.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, we're going to talk about it. Let's get into the detail once we cover it in our podcast.
All right. Well, that seems like a good place to break, and we'll be back momentarily.
Just one thing before we go, since it is Halloween and Wondery and our sister pods are having, you know, Halloween themed podcasts, and I was just wondering, do you guys have any ghost stories? Honestly, has anything odd ever happened to you that you'd want to share? I have one little thing that happened to me.
Well, go for it, and we'll see if that inspires us.
So I don't believe in ghosts, and I don't really believe in the paranormal, but one thing did happen to me that I cannot explain. I was living in Denver, as I've told you before. I was living in a very old three-story house with three roommates, and nobody was home at the time, and I heard somebody walking up the grand staircase, you know, big heavy boots. I live with two guys, and so I thought it was one of them, and I was like, hey, hello, and I didn't hear anybody, and I ran to the window to see if their cars were in front of the house where we parked. There was nobody there, and I kept hearing somebody walking, and I got very scared, but I'm looking all around, and you know, I take kitchen knife out of the silverware drawer, and I'm looking around. There's nobody there, and I keep hearing the steps coming closer and closer, and pretty soon they're going above me, above my head. And I thought, oh my gosh, there was an inner stairwell, because it was an old house, and they had like a servant stairwell that went inside the walls. And I thought,
what?
Yes. And I thought, oh God, somebody is in there. And you can't get through there, because it was like collapsed, and there was wood that was definitely so that you couldn't go through there. And on each floor of the house, you could open the door, the interior, and look up, and there was nobody there. And I ran to the top floor, and I'm thinking, is there somebody on the roof? Where are these steps going? And I'm looking all around, and there's nobody there. And then I hear the front door open, and my roommate comes home, and I ran down to him. I just heard these steps, and I don't know where it came from. And he looks at me, he goes, oh yeah, this place is haunted. And I said, why do you say that? And he said, Lisa, haven't you heard the jumping around in the middle of the night? He's like, I thought you were doing aerobics. And I walked into the hallway, and there was nobody there, but there was somebody walking around. And so I was like, wow. You know, so that's my ghost story. But and I've never been able to explain it. You guys?
Interesting.
Well, I haven't had an experience like that, but I know that the son of a friend of mine was visiting with the family back east to their in-laws' new home. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't a new home. It was a 200-year-old home. Mm-hmm. And it was a very large, sort of almost like a mansion. And the father and the son went to go sleep in one of the guest rooms and with the old skeleton key and so forth. And when the father opened the door, he felt this rush of cold wind. And the son said, "Dad, why is there a guy sitting on the couch in there?" And he said, "What guy?" And he said, "The guy over there. And let's, I just don't want to use the actual name, but uh-huh. It was something almost akin to Rumpelstiltskin. He said his name is Sam Rumpelstiltskin. Okay, very weird, long name, and just not a simple name, right? And so the father said, "Okay, we're not sleeping here." He locked the door. He went back down to his father and said, "Look, you know, my son, your grandson, just told me that he saw a guy in the room. I felt this rush of cold air. And he said the guy said his name was Sam Rumpelstiltskin." And the father, his father, who now owned this house, goes to the foyer, and there's a big wraparound staircase. And when you're standing at the bottom of the staircase, there are photos on the wall, pictures on wrapping around on the wall. And he had to take like a pole to take the one photo down. And it was a very old, before they actually took photographs, they did these silhouettes of people. And it was an old silhouette, and it said Sam Rumpelstiltskin on it. He was the original owner of the house.
Oh, my God.
And the son had no way of knowing that, right. And he could never have seen 20 feet up onto the wall there.
Right.
So that's pretty damn spooky.
That is. And that I know is. The friend you're... I mean, I know who this person is, and I know that this person would never make this up. Like, this really happened to them, yeah.
Yeah, and she had some other stories about things that child had said, and it's pretty amazing.
That is amazing.
So... You got to wonder.
You just don't know.
There are some things you just cannot explain. And, you know, I have to say I'm a believer, not to be confused or swapped in with I'm a believer, which is a whole different thing.
So are you not a believer?
It might be a guilty pleasure. But in terms of being a believer, the last three songs, I have to say, Jim C, you know,
really?
I kind of have myself saying, you know, I think I am a believer.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So, you know, Justin Bieber and you
if
being
you're
a believer,
that means you're a follower of Justin Bieber.
I'm not cool enough.
But I think
that.
On, you know, is that a ghostly tale? Probably not. But I think, you know, I think definitely there are things that we cannot explain. Yeah. And I remember my best friend's parents bought a house and it had a minstrel's gallery. Do you know what that is? Mm-hmm. Where you have sort of like an open lounge area with a gallery that you go up the stairs and it's got a gallery going round it in a square. So, and it's got, you know, a banister, but you can see through the banister to the lounge area. And so when they first moved in there, the mother kept saying that she could see people, and that she could see people in the minstrel's gallery looking down at them, but whenever she looked directly up at them, they disappeared. And so, you know, being the skeptic that I am, as the, you know, the new budding behavioral analyst and criminal behavioral analyst.
You asked her how much she had to drink.
Exactly.
Right?
How much gin and wine was consumed. But, you know, I didn't get a sense when I walked into this house until they put me in the spare bedroom. And previously, I'd been sleeping, whenever I stayed there, I'd sleep in a different room, and none of the family wanted to sleep in this bedroom. And so,
of course... So they put you there?
Well, it was like a little experiment. It wasn't a cruel thing. I mean, you know, I wasn't a believer at this time, but in I went. You know, we'd been out for a night out, and I went into this bedroom, and I have to say it had a very odd feel to it, in that when I was lying in bed, I felt this real sense of coldness around my body. And not that I saw anything until the morning, which was something that unnerved me slightly, because as well as feeling this real sense of cold, and it wasn't something that I felt was meant me any harm, it just felt incredibly cold. And when I woke up the next morning, my friend and I had gone out the night before, and we had made sort of a chow mein. We'd come in and we'd chopped up various vegetables, you know, popped them in a wok. And, you know, we'd eaten late. I think it was about, you know, midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. And so when I woke up in the bedroom, at the end of the bed was all the chopped vegetables that we'd had just lying on my duvet. Which, you know, whether they were playing a trick on me, but none of the family admitted to them leaving the chopped vegetables at the end of the bed. And I basically went downstairs and I explained what had happened to the dad. And, you know, he thought it was quite funny at first. And so I took them upstairs to show them. And actually then the vegetables were kind of strewn around on the floor with some tissue paper. And, you know, maybe it was something that one of them had done just to kind of, you know, weird me out. But they all said that they, you know, had no knowledge of this at all.
But I thought and you said you ate.
We did eat it, but not all of it. We just took some vegetables out, chopped some of them, put them in a wok.
You didn't put them in your bed, certainly.
I certainly did not put them in my bed. And as far as I can recall, you know, having felt this uneasy sense of being in that room, which continued, and I did not sleep in that room thereafter. But the mother always said that she sensed people were there, but they didn't mean any harm, and that all these little strange things kept happening. That was just one thing for me of many things that had happened in that bedroom and with many other people. You know, I think there are things that happen that can't be explained, and we all want to give a rational reason. You know, I kept thinking, well, I'd gone downstairs, I must have chopped some more vegetables, I must have brought them up. You think of every way, you know, to make it make sense, and sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, interestingly, on Friday night when I was out, our Uber driver explained that he had a podcast, and seeing as we're talking about Halloween, he has just started a podcast called Around the Campfire. And I was just listening to it on the drive over just to see what it was like. Mm-hmm. And they've only literally got one podcast that they've posted. And he said at the moment they're recording it in a closet. They're not actually in a studio as yet. But, you know, it was pretty good in the sense that it's there were two. They've just got one episode out at the moment, and you can find it on iTunes. But it's two women talking about events that happened in their childhood. And much as you just described, Jim, with your friend's son, one of them in particular was a child, and a woman kept appearing in her bedroom. And she, you know, you listen to the podcast and you'll hear the story, but she now maintains as an adult that as a child, you know, you're very susceptible to things and you're much more likely to be open to things happening. So, you know, the podcast Around the Campfire is about people's experiences, real life experiences, recounting odd things that they just cannot give a reason for.
That sounds good. And, you know, I mean, there are a lot of people out there, and I'm not trying to defame anyone, but there are people who, you know, see aliens and ghosts and all that kind of stuff all the time. They just happen to see all that. But when everyday people who don't believe in any of that stuff start seeing this kind of thing and experience these kinds of things, that does creep me out a little bit. That
definitely
does kind of, because I don't like not knowing, you know, what's going on when I'm sleeping. Okay. I want to know, you know, that nobody's creeping around and, you know, so it is a little spooky and scary.
But it's Halloween. So we'd weigh in there with a few stories.
In that vein, because I'm sure they'll do something for Halloween, because these guys are amazing. H. Allen and Margot have a podcast called Talking Crime, a not-so-serious true crime podcast. And I think what's amazing about them is that they're talking about serious subjects, but they're both comedians. And why is that good? Because professionals who work in criminal professions, who work around crime, have to deal with these horrible things every day. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that they actually balance that, and it's healthy psychologically, is with humor. Humor helps to, you know, blow off steam and prevent you from getting too down about all the things that you have to see every day when you do this kind of work. So I really think H. Allen and Margot are amazing. They're funny.
They are.
They're real. They're friends of ours, and they are something to behold. So I really think that everybody out there should listen to Talking Crime, a not-so-serious true crime podcast.
Right. And just to give a shout out to The Fool as well, which is one of my favorite shows, and Lisa's
and
Jim's, Jim C's. And they've just had season 3 airing in the UK. I'm not going to give any spoilers. I haven't seen it, but I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah, I mean, it's truly amazing. And I think we all talked about earlier that the great show that's, I think, similar in terms of tone is The Night Of. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that is the best depiction I've ever seen of New York City cops and New York City precincts and how things go down in New York City around crime and murder. And I thought probably the best actor in the whole show was the prosecutor. I thought her job, she just did such an amazing job. And being a former New York City prosecutor, I can understand the different pressures and the different things that they have to go through. But the way she played it, it was just so real and down to earth. And I just love it. Just
well, I'm just in the middle of it now. Yeah. So I've just seen her coming on and I don't know how it's going to end up. So don't
give you any spoilers. But you have something in store for you that you're going to really enjoy, I think, because it's a really well-made show. It's the most adept use of tension that I've ever seen.
Very, very much.
On TV.
Yeah. And even if you really get into it, you'll see that the camera work is incredible. There is so much that you see in reflection, like there'll be a reflection in a puddle of something going on. There's always like a little bit of obscure, the camera's almost obscured sometimes, right. And I think that's
the cinematography.
Genius.
Yeah,
yes.
It's incredible.
The actress that plays Naz's mom, Purna, she's a former student of mine at the Actors Studio.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's really cool to see her in such a great
role. That's awesome.
That's great.
Yeah. I want to do a shout out to my husband's podcast, Paul Sullivan, Sully Baseball Daily. On Monday, it will be his 4-year anniversary of doing a podcast about baseball every single day. For the past 4 years, he has posted a podcast. So he's more reliable
dedication.
Than the mailman.
Unbelievable.
Every day he does it.
And even holidays?
Holidays, birthdays. If he's sick, he had like an appendicitis. Or not appendicitis. What do you have? A kidney stone. He did it in the hospital.
He
had a kidney stone. He's very dedicated to the sport of baseball.
His commitment to the cause, indeed.
I know
good work, Paul.
He interviewed my dad on one podcast, and everybody in my family and my extended family just loves it. It's really amazing how we got my father to talk about the old days. And I could not believe the detail that my father recalled.
Yeah.
The names of the shortstop and what he used to do for fun and every name of every guy that he used to play with back in the day, back in the Bronx.
And his attention to detail is amazing.
Paul's listeners say that was one of their favorite podcasts because
awesome.
It's such a great, just a great little...
And now I've been to my first baseball game. I can sort of work out what he's talking about now. Had no idea before.
Well, I will tell you this. I have really tried to understand cricket, and I just can't do it. I just don't get it. So I totally understand that you couldn't get baseball, because if that's your foundation, I don't understand how they're related at all.
Need someone to navigate through the territory. I mean, of course, cricket's a much longer game than baseball.
4 months sometimes.
It takes a while to finish a game.
I mean,
That's true.
They seem to be running back and forth, and I don't know what the outfield is, and pitching season.
It makes no sense.
The ball has to hit the ground first? I mean, it's just weird.
They dress really well, though.
They do. Pristine whites.
White. Yep.
Like Wimbledon tennis.
Really?
Pristine whites.
Well, you know, isn't that a thing of the past, though? Haven't they? Do they still do that at Wimbledon?
Yeah, they still maintain that.
Really? Because
I remember... All the other competitions and tournaments, you don't have to.
Yeah, McEnroe, I think. Was it McEnroe?
It was Agassi. He wanted to wear like a pink shirt, and they're like, no, sorry.
Yeah, the rules and regs are very strict there.
Yeah,
so,
well,
and I know...
you wouldn't want color to invade.
Exactly. Quite right, too, with the, you know, strawberries and cream and Pimm's. And that's just us watching the tennis, but not the players. But yes, it's an institution in its own right, both cricket and the tennis and baseball here.
Well, guys, this has been our little mini cast to tide you over until some shows that we are so excited about to post. So you're going to have to stay tuned. And anything else, Jim?
I think that's it. But we are happy that we have such a great following, and we have some really amazing shows coming up, and we're really hoping that everybody enjoys them and learns a thing or two and shares them with their friends and family.
All right, guys.
All right. Signing off for Real Crime Profile.
So if you enjoy our podcast and would like to support us, there are a couple of important things you can do. First, you can go over to iTunes and give us a positive 5-star review. You can check out our sponsors and take advantage of the special promotions for Real Crime Profile listeners. you can go over and like our Facebook page and you can follow us on Twitter. But most importantly, you can share our podcast with friends, family, and anyone you know would be interested in real crime and the minds that solve those crimes. So thank you for listening.
Real Crime Profile is produced and edited by Paul Francis Sullivan. Sound engineered by Terrell Parham. Music composed by Simba Tsumba. Logo art by Jim Clementi. Real Crime Profile is produced by XG Productions and distributed by Wondery.
For advice and support if you're experiencing stalking in the UK, you can contact Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service on 0203 866 4107, or you can go on the website www.paladinservice.co.uk. If you're experiencing domestic violence, call the National Domestic Violence Helpline, free phone 0800 2000 247. In the US, if you're experiencing domestic abuse and need advice, safety, shelter or counselling, call Genesis, the 24-hour hotline, 214 946 4357 or go on their website www.genesisshelter.org or the domestic violence hotline on 800 799 7233.
If you're a regular listener to the show, you know we have great brands like Blue Apron, Audible, and Casper advertising with us, and they keep coming back because our listeners really respond to them, which we're really thankful for. Well, if you happen to own a business or manage the advertising buy for one, then you should consider advertising on Real Crime Profile. Podcast advertising is on the rise, and it's one of the most effective ways of reaching consumers on the go today. So please go to wondery.com/advertisers. Again, it's wondery.com/advertisers. And get in touch with us. Thanks.